nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
First thing I want to do is welcome folks. This is the Introduction to Nanotechnology Educators Workshop. My name is Bob Ehrman. I'm at Penn State University. I'm the managing director of a national NSF ATE resource center called the NAC Center, Nanotechnology Applications and Career Knowledge. I've been here for like 16 years. Before that, I worked in industry for 17 years, I guess. I just had my 40th anniversary of working. I was like seven when I started, started work. If people are doing their math. And I worked in industry for 23 years before that. So I am going to be co-hosting today, your co-presenter. The other presenter is Dr. Mariel Kolker. And I'm going to let her introduce herself. Go ahead, Mariel.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mariel Kolker. I am a second career teacher. I worked as a mechanical engineer in the power distribution and generation industry for about a decade and a half. And then I moved over to teaching. I teach physics, and I also authored and teach a course called Nanoscale Science and Engineering at Morristown High School in Morristown, New Jersey. And I'll be your presenter this week and next week.
All right, so there you go. So I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Kolker here, and she will take us through the next section. And first thing is about what is nanotechnology?
All right, so what is nanotechnology, and why should I care about it? This is really why we're all here. On a typical day anywhere in the world, you have people that are, passing you, and what we don't realize is that all of these the things that are integrated into our lives are all part of or contributed to by nanoscience and nanotechnology. So there's a tremendous amount of nanotechnology that's in your pocket and, you know, in your house and in your clothing and in your technology that you might not even be aware of. It's amazing. And what Bob had said before was there's no research that's going on right now in science that doesn't in some way intersect with nanotechnology. So we think that it's a really important subject that educators need to know about, obviously, and that our students need to know about. So just to give you an idea of the extent to which nanoscience is like at the forefront, at the cutting edge of science right now. What is the challenge that we've all had? It's fighting COVID-19, and nanoscience has impacted this effort in so many different ways. So the lab tests are nanoscience powered. The point of care, like the rapid tests, are nanoscience powered. The at-home tests, it's a different kind of nanotechnology, but it's in there. Personal protective gear and everything you see on here, sensors, antimicrobial coatings, everywhere you can think of, there's a tremendous activity of nanoscience research going on. And the applications, you know, we didn't know that we needed this until COVID-19 happened. And then all the labs turned on and, you know, and we used nanoscience, scientists use nanotechnologies to make these things happen. So it's really ubiquitous in our lives. For example, here we have the rapid test. The rapid test involves gold nanoparticles. And gold nanoparticles have this amazing property of not being the color gold when you see them. If you can fabricate them to be a specific size because of the way that they interact with light, they reflect blue or red or purple. So what happens is if you can change the size of the nanoparticle, you change the color that you're looking at. And so it's a rapid test because they scientists functionalize the nanoparticles to do something in the presence of COVID. When they change, so if they aggregate and they get larger, the color changes. So hence a rapid test. It's just a really small way in which nanoscience is came to the rescue, right? We have another one. This is not the COVID test. This is the antibody test. And in this case, you can see the lines that are created. It's kind of like a pregnancy test thing here, where you get the lines that are created, and they are created in the presence of certain antibodies that are in your blood. Again, gold nanoparticles that are coming to the rescue. Bob, you want to take the slide? How vaccines are being developed with messenger RNA?
Sure, sure. Without nanotechnology, I got this in a Rite Aid ad last week, I believe it was, and it was an email, and it tells you how mRNA is utilized. The vaccines that are out there right now, the mRNA, they've been studying this platform for like 16 years. So it didn't just start in the beginning of 2020 when this mRNA platform has been out there. So basically, if without nanotechnology, we would not be at the place we are right now with vaccines. If we hadn't been studying this for the last 16 years using the tools of nanotechnology and looking at the nanoscale and looking at the biological world, RNA and DNA and so on, we would not have the mRNA-based vaccines that we have today. So that's kind of all I wanted to show. And you, well, by the way, we'll have all these slides. If you want to look through them, they'll all be posted for you.
All right. So what is nanotechnology? So the short answer is any matter that is between 1 and 100 nanometers, and matter and materials have unique and novel properties at that scale. So because of that, anything that is done with materials at that scale is considered nanotechnology. That sounds nice, but let's just delve into it. How small actually is the nano size? The nanoscale. So I'm assuming that everybody who's here knows that a nanometer is 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter. It's 10 to the negative 9. Actually, October 9th is National Nanotechnology Day. Don't know if we knew that, if everybody knew that, but now you do. And DNA is on here. Does anybody know why DNA is on here? Okay. Well, DNA, if you uncoil it, one single strand is 2.5 nanometers in width. So that's great to know, but it doesn't really tell us how big the nanoscale is, because we don't really have a functional operating understanding of how small DNA is, right? So this doesn't really help. So let's go backward. Let's start from the macro scale. So if we measured in nanometers, one strand of the hair on your head would be 80 to 100,000 nanometers in diameter. And pennies. So if you remember the old Lincoln penny, if you look really, really closely, and I didn't know this until I started teaching nanotechnology, but if you look really closely on the back, there's a tiny little Abe Lincoln sitting there. And if you zoomed into this teeny, tiny little Abe Lincoln, and you zoomed into his face, and you zoomed into his eye, and you zoomed into his eyelash, that eyelash would be 100 nanometers wide. So that's another way of thinking about it. But then here's the last example I have for you. If the Earth were 1 meter in diameter, how small would a nanometer be? It would be a marble. And this is the one that actually blows my mind. Every year I teach this to my students. Every year they tell me every one of them has a different thing that just makes them go, oh my gosh, but this is the one for me. This is the one that I think is so amazing. okay, so it is really, really small. So 1/1,000,000th, how long ago this was on Twitter a couple of years ago, and this is another favorite. How long ago was 1 million seconds? How long ago was 1 billion seconds? So 1 million seconds ago was January 11th, which was, 2 weeks ago, right? 1 billion seconds was May 16th, 1989. And that is an amazing thing, right? That is an absolutely amazing way to think about billions and billions. So take a look. It starts with the boy, then the apple seed, then the thickness of a penny, then the length of a dust mite. And I had to Google some of these. Then the length of a human muscle cell, which apparently are quite large. Then an amoeba, which are also quite large. Then the thickness of a staple, then the thickness of a sewing thread. then a red blood cell, and then a bacterium. Bacteria are actually quite large. And then wavelength of visible light. And then you get down below visible light, which is the diameter of a virus, ribosome, proteinase enzyme, carbon nanotube, water molecule, nitrogen atom, and an oxygen, and the nucleus. So nanoscale truly is where that virus, and then, you know, to about the carbon nanotube, right? So we're not making molecules, we're not getting into anything smaller than that, but it's largely at the level of where biology takes place. And so that, for that reason, so much of what's happening at the nanoscale is medical. Because, and that's what you saw that with the COVID, you know, response, because you're kind of operating at that level. Then also you're looking at the carbon nanotube, and there's so much materials and things that we can make. We can assemble these, you know, highly precise, molecularly precise materials with amazing properties. So anyway, we've got here the microscopes. So what we were saying, the unaided eye all the way to the right, which is the baseball and things we can see. Then there's the optical microscopes. And I think that yellow shade goes a little too far, because we were discussing earlier that you really can't see a virus with an optical microscope. You do need a different type of technology.
And then probably down to one micron, maybe, or 1,000. Okay. Range you could see with it. So,
well, one micron is at the scale of the bacteria, right?
That's right. So a bacteria, you could see bacteria.
Yeah. We can see bacteria. Viruses, no. In fact, in order to test for viruses, often what we're doing is we're testing for whether the antibodies are there. Like with an optical microscope, you can see the antibodies, you can't see the virus. And everything, all these things, the molecules, the materials, the building blocks of life are all below that. And so you need a special type of characterization for that. So let's talk really briefly about what's so special about the nanoscale. So this is straight out of the Next Gen Science Standards, and anybody who's here from K-12 knows about them. If your state's not using them, they're kind of the gold standard. And so most states, so like at least two-thirds or more than two-thirds of the states are, if they're not directly using them, they're using some modification of them. And this is straight from a framework for K-12 science education. One of the cross-cutting ideas is scale, proportion, and quantity. And the large idea is that the way things work changes with scale. And that's, and so the relationships among them change too. So that is actually a very, very fundamental concept in science. And that's the reason why maybe this should be in all the sciences. This concept of scale is something that we need to work harder at teaching our students. So objects behave differently when they're at the nanoscale. So the way light interacts with objects and material changes, gravity starts to just be, you know, insignificant, and intermolecular forces dominate, things get sticky, surface effects become important. And because of that, motion becomes really complicated, and quantum effects dominate. So this is amazing. It's an amazing world, the world of the nanoscale. But nanoengineering, which is, you know, the nanotechnology, the results of nanotechnology, is about understanding how things are different and using them to manipulate matter, right? Understanding that gold nanoparticles are going to change color when they're different sizes, and then using that to make a test. So this is one example. This is Compound Interest, which is the amazing person that puts together these graphics. If you've never seen them, they're so fun. It's all chemistry, but it's so much fun. But he did one on graphene a while ago, and it really is a super material. So I'm going to zoom in on the properties of graphene. So graphene is a single atomic layer, a sheet of carbon. It's really graphite, but honest to God, the Nobel Prize was won by two scientists that used Scotch tape. Not lying. Scotch tape on a piece of graphite, pulled it off, and then they dissolved the scotch tape and they got graphene, like a single atomic layer, and won the Nobel Prize for it. But look at this. It's got high electrical conductivity. It's 200 times stronger than steel. It's thin, lightweight. It is transparent, and it's highly thermally conductive. So it is they talk about it as a wonder material, and it kind of is. It's see-through. It's enabling all kinds of things that we'll talk about in future weeks. And it's not just graphene, it's not just carbon. Molybdenum disulfide is another one that's two elements, but together in a single, or, you know, this double atomic layer, as you can see in the bottom left. There's actually this whole kind of 2D periodic table that's being put together with all these different materials that have these exceptional properties at the nanoscale, where there's one layer or two layers. So let's just start talking about some of the ways in which they're different. Light matter interactions are different at the nanoscale. You've got macro gold, which looks like that. And then you've got nanoscale gold. So when you shrink it and you shrink it to a certain size, it actually becomes, this is a picture of blue gold, purple gold, and red gold. And it's amazing. And it's really easy to make in the classroom. Really easy to make. And the kids are just amazed by it. And they're colloid. So you can do it in a colloid demonstration. The way that light interacts with matter also goes on to explain how we get these beautiful stained glass windows, why bubbles are different colors. This butterfly is actually not blue. It is brown, in the same way that peacock's feathers are actually brown. And because biology has learned how to to create structures that capture and reflect light in amazing ways. And then down on the lower left, these are quantum dots, which use quantum properties of materials and actually will glow. They fluoresce at these, and you can actually buy a television down at Costco that's a quantum dot television. So it's amazing. Surface effects on the nanoscale are terrific. So the first thing that you look at is this amazing creature on the left-hand side that has learned how to move at the nanoscale, because as I said before, it's extremely complicated because so much of, the fluids become really viscous for really tiny things. You're looking at surface area to volume ratio on the right-hand side of three different hypothetical cells. And, you know, the size of life is highly dependent upon surface area to volume ratio, which goes way out of whack when you get really small. Most of the material is on the outside. The bottom picture is salt crystals, and the salt crystals are at the nanoscale. And so there's a lot of actual food chemistry that goes on with nanoscale ingredients because of the surface area and taking advantage of that. So there's a tremendous applications in all areas because of these surface effects. And we have quantum effects. So this is, we're looking at on the right-hand side, a diagram of what we call quantum tunneling, which is that a particle can go rather over a barrier. In classical mechanics, it can go through a barrier. And why that's a big deal is because, you know, you could have a wire or you could have insulation on a wire, and then all of a sudden an electron no longer cares that there's insulation and just pops out of the wire. This is actually real. This happens. And we actually harness it. If you look on the top left, you've got an image, a drawing of a scanning tunneling microscope. So those pink electrons are actually tunneling through a space where there's no reason for them to be able to go through the air, yet they do. So, and then down on the bottom, we've got that gorgeous chandelier is actually a quantum computer. So, which also harnesses these quantum effects. So there's so much at the quantum scale that's enabling new technologies. So the next question we have for you are how we got here. And the answer is things just keep getting smaller and smaller. So Bob is going to share with you how fabrication has gone.
And then I'm going to give you actually, over this time, we're going to be talking the next period here. We'll be talking about fabrication, but I am going to be going pretty rapid fire through some of the stuff here, wherein we're going to spend one of our full weeks, you know, for a 2-hour session on fabrication in week 5. So I'll talk about how we got here, and I want to show you modern.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, absolutely. Go right ahead.
So. You talked about the duality of nanoscale particles behaving both wave-like and particle-like. And I'm curious to know, do you think that, you know, the lack of development of our understanding of quantum properties is really what holds us back in nanoscience? Because I kind of feel like the more we are able to explain the phenomena displayed at the quantum level, the further we're going to go in nanoscience.
Well, there, I'll answer that if you don't mind. So, it's a really good question. There are different areas in nanoscience that are really exploding. So at the medical level, medicine and the biology and the science of life, that is just exploding. Electronics is another area. So in electronics, you have to be careful to avoid the quantum effects.
Exactly.
But then there's also the people that are building quantum computers where they're trying to only get quantum effects. So there are different kind of bubbles that are kind of being created within nanoscience. And and those are really, you know, those are three of the major ones. So yeah, electronics, you can go, and Bob's going to talk about this in a minute. You can go small, but you can't go small, infinitely small, because at some point there's a limit, right? That where
right.
You have to get rid of, you have to say, we got to stop. So Bob, I'm going to hand it over to you because you're actually going to talk about that in a minute. So,
okay,
go ahead.
So I was on this slide here. So this is modern electronics, right?
Right.
No, not necessarily. It's circa 1991 modern electronics. Okay. So in the middle of this ad here, you'll see, I don't know if you can see this, one of these right here. I happen to have a little one in my hand. What's this thing called again? What is this?
Oh, legit, the...
No, in my hand, oh. In my picture here.
What's in brain the fryer.
A brain fryer.
Is it a cordless phone?
Yeah, it's a cell phone. It's a cell phone. And I bet you people like Al Schwabenbauer had one of these back in 1991.
I had one of those back in 1991.
anybody who still has them, I'd love to have them for show and tell because they're really fun, you know. This was my father-in-law's he had. But everything on this page is about $3,100 worth of stuff, okay? And the cell phone was new in 1991. This is actually a circa 1993 cell phone. The difference between this phone and the cell phone that's right there on this page is that you can see what's attached to that phone. What was attached to your phone, Lydia? What was attached to your phone? What did you have besides the...
The battery.
Yes, and they called them back phones, right?
The phone.
and they had a lot of functionality, didn't they, Lydia? What kind of functionality did they have?
Not a lot. You could make a phone call on them if you were in the right zone.
So the infrastructure wasn't there, right, that we have today. And sometimes you could receive calls, too. So they were... Oh, yeah. I remember when they first came out, I'm like, wow, a lot of work to do on these things. I'm not an early adopter, thank God, because I didn't have one of these, but I'm glad I have one for now. So that's modern electronics in 1991. Now, if you look, this is the progression of where we have gone with, let's just look, use cell phones right here. That's 1991. These are all Bob's, okay? When I started this at Penn State, coming from industry, that was my Verizon cell phone, my free with a 2-year, if you remember, you buy a 2-year contract, you get the free phone. Well, that was my Verizon flip phone. And that had incredible functionality also. You could make calls, you could receive calls a little bit better, you know, you could text at that point too. And there was at least one game, I never knew that this, but something called Snake or something like that, I heard. There was a game. Does anybody else know that? That's what I heard. Snake. Okay. Emmanuel is saying, yeah, he remembers this. Okay. Okay, so we had that. And then this is my same phone I have right now. And I bought it in, 2017, the iPhone 7 Plus that I have. I am not an early adopter. You can see all the functionality on that phone, and we're to 2021, so I don't even know what other functionality I could have had or could have on my phone right now, but I'll get there probably next year or so when I get another phone. But you can see on there, one of the icons on there, for those of you who know, I'm from Jersey, from North Jersey, you can see there's a Yankee icon within this thing. You got to have that to check out the scores and see if there's been any trades made and things like that. So the progression has been incredible, Why am I telling you all about this? Well, because right now, all the things that were on that Radio Shack ad from 1991, those $3,100 of stuff that you would have had to carry on in a pickup truck, basically, to move around, are all contained within your cell phone, the functionality of your cell phone. Okay? So that's pretty incredible if you think about that. And the same thing has happened with computers, and you could translate that to any electronic device. The computer that the computer on the right is the one I'm working on right now, this Lenovo ThinkPad that I bought in 2019, late 2019. I should say Penn State bought it for me. And there's the first IBM laptop there with 1986. You can see, you can compare the functionality of the two. Anybody remember the 5 1/4 inch floppies?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And the, what was it, 3 1/2 and 5 1/4 inch floppies? Mm-hmm. I think I still have some of them in a box somewhere. They might come back into vogue. I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, so you could see the difference in functionality and the things you can do on your computer. You know, you name it, any electronic device has gone in that same direction. So, and the question would be, how did we get there? Well, it's basically all about, you remember The Graduate? You know, the question was, you know, I got one word for you. Plastics. Okay. I got one word for you, nanotechnology. Okay. It started with microtechnology and we moved to truly nanotechnology. It was microtechnology in the 1960s when you had a, you know, the, basically you had a chip, maybe the size of my thumbnail. Okay. And on that chip, you had 100 transistors. And those transistors are the size of between the source and the drain, okay, where the electronic signal was sent, okay, the you know, kind of the underlying of digital logic, the zeros and ones of digital logic go, you know, the series of those. Basically, the distance between those two points were somewhere between 10 and 30 microns in the 1960s. So just to give you a reference point again, because that's 10,000 to 30,000 nanometers, or probably about the third the width of your the diameter of your hair. Well, that was incredible, if you think about it. Incredible technology for the 1960s, okay? It enabled us, you know, things like transistor radios and solid state basically came into play in the 60s. By 1988, we crossed the kind of 1 micron gate length, so everybody had big celebrations in 1988. So the, again, the electrons only had to go 1 micron. We then had, instead of hundreds of transistors on that chip, the size of my thumbnail, we had millions of transistors in the 1990s. Okay. Now in, let's fast forward to 2019, we got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. We had greater than 10 billion transistors on a chip. Okay, so and the gate length, instead of being 10 to 30 nanometers in the 60s, was down to 7 nanometers. And the prediction was for 2020 was 5 nanometers in gate length. Okay, well, guess what? They made it. The Apple M1 chip actually hit the 5 meter gate length. And this is actually came out just in November, November 10th of 2020, very recent information that 16 billion transistors on that same piece of real estate where we had hundreds of transistors back in the 60s. Okay. So how did we get there? Well, we had to figure out how to make things at that scale. Okay. We had to improve the tool sets that were out. The fabrication tools were there back in the 1960s to make things at the nanoscale. They invented them. And basically think about nanoscale machine shop. They figured out how to make things at that scale. And there's fabs all over the country making these. And you've heard of many of them, I'm sure. And they actually just continue to compete with each other. I should say all over the world, compete with each other, got better and better and better. During week five, Terry Kuzma is going to talk about manufacturing approaches at the nanoscale, both top-down approaches, okay, nanofabrication or top-down nanofabrication, which is primarily focused on things like microelectronics via top-down methods. Then you're also going to talk about bottom-up techniques, which is a lot of chemistry, basically. So we'll be talking about both of those in week five. So that's just kind of a preview of where we are. So Now, in order to make things, I worked in industry for 23 years. And while I was there, I could make something and we had to be able to see what we were making. How did you do that? You had to characterize it. You had to look at it. You had to determine whether the product you were putting out was meeting the specifications of the customer. So you had to do measurements on it or look at it or look for things in it or look for things on it. So in order to make those things at the nanoscale, either nanocharacterization tools were improved or characterization tools were improved or invented, like things like the atomic force microscope was invented in the one of the tools that was invented is the atomic force microscope in the 1980s. The people who invented it actually got the Nobel Prize for actually for inventing this. You can see this on the in the center picture here. You can see it looks like a cantilever, like a diving board with a little probe on the bottom of it. And that's got the end of the probe has got nanoscale features. And it basically rasters across the surface back and forth and actually then sends a signal basically back to a detector. You send a laser to it, a detect comes back. And then you basically see an image of that, okay, on a computer screen. What they've done with it is actually back in 86, they actually spelled out IBM, one of the inventors of this, actually spelled out their logo using xenon atoms on a near absolute zero nickel surface. So that's kind of cool. Those are actually atoms, depictions of atoms that they moved around. There's actually a really cool video. It's called A Boy and His Atom, right? I think you probably use this, Mario. That's really cool that they updated this maybe about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, where they actually play the again, going in the Wayback Machine, play Pong. Using atoms, basically. It's really, really cool.
That link is actually on the resources talk that we're going to be.
Oh, great, great. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing that we'll tell you is that there is a resources link. Mario spent a lot of time on, and we added some resources to that that are things that you can use within your classroom. So, okay, cool. Another tool is the scanning electron microscope. And if you remember that scale that Mariel had before, you had optical microscope and then electron microscopy. This is using atoms basically at the to be able to characterize down below, say the micron, 1 micron level, in order to characterize those features that or things that are at the nanoscale, like the viruses that we have today that we're working on today, like the DNA and anything that's in the nanoscale or looking at those gold nanoparticles we talked about earlier, or anything that's in that nanoscale area, you're using various types of scanning electron microscopes. And again, these were really developed for the electronics industry, for the microelectronics industry, and they got improved because they needed them to be able to get smaller and smaller and to make those features that we talked about earlier. So let's look at an example of how our understanding of the nanoscale can change our lives. Well, we're already changing our lives because we change it through microelectronics, all the things we just talked about through our computers, through our phones and things like that. What about other things like biological features and things like that? So I'll give you an example of one here. So you guys have seen this, okay? My little plastic lily pad right here, okay? Got to have it. If you're teaching nanotechnology, you got to have your plastic nanotechnology leaf. Randy, you need to get one of these, buddy. So you can see this is the Lotus effect. And what it is that the water is actually not penetrating the surface. And the surface is hydrophobic, basically, okay? The surface of the leaf is hydrophobic or water-fearing. The image on the left is a hydrophobic material or water on a hydrophobic material surface. And then the image on the right would be a hydrophilic surface or water-loving surface, okay? And why does this leaf exhibit those properties? I don't know what anybody else thought about it, but when I was a kid, you know, or looking at this looking at a leaf like that, I thought it was because the surface was just, it was obvious. It was really smooth. Okay. And the water just kind of went right off the surface. So therefore that's why it went off. I never really thought too much about it until I got into this field. But then I learned that, okay, we can look at these leaves and we can determine What does the leaf look like? Of course, it looks like that at the macro scale. But if you use those tools or translate those tools that you use for electronics industry and use the scanning electron microscope, you can see and you can look at the features of the of this leaf using the scanning electron microscope. These four images are there, and I'm gonna expand them a little bit as you go forward here. So you can see the scale on the lower left here. That's 10 millimeters. You see there's like nodules on there. Not as smooth as I thought it was. Go down a little bit further. This is a 2 millimeter scale. I'm sorry, micron scale. That was 10 microns. This is 2 microns. Okay. Now it looks like a little bit of spaghetti surface, if you will. Get down to 1 micron and you can see how small we are. You can, some of those features are down at hundred nanometers or hundreds of nanometers. And now I'm looking at 200 nanometer scale. You can see you're down in the micron, hundreds of microns or micron scale. So you can see right now the features on this leaf, if you look at it at the nanoscale, micron nanoscale, are actually, it is not a smooth surface. And the reason the water does not penetrate is because of the micro and nano features on that surface. The surface tension, basically, of the water does not allow it to spread out, if you will. Okay, it will not spread out. So actually, what it does is roll off the leaf, and it has self-cleaning properties. That makes sense to everybody? Cool. All right, you guys have seen this before. So that's one little thing, the lotus effect. On the 12th of, that's not another palindrome, but it's a lot of twos and ones in that one. 2-1-2-1-2-2-1. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, man. On the 12th of February, there's a lot of nanoscale characterization tools, but two of the prevalent ones are the ones that I just mentioned, where like the scanning probe and scanning electron microscopy. We're going to spend some time going through those two tools. Wes and Oscar will be talking. Oscar, some of you got here earlier. He was here at the beginning of the session. They will be actually talking about that. And they'll also introduce you to something that we, through our National Center, we offer to educators and to classrooms across the country from about 20 different entities across the nation, which is called RAIN, or the Remotely Accessible Instruments for Nanotechnology. I encourage you to try it out. I think Mariel's used it in her classroom. And basically, you can have your students operate some of these tool sets at the nanoscale. And it's not just these two. We got a whole, I think we have 40 different instruments that people can operate from different places across the country. Mariel, I think, uses Penn State. I don't know if you used anybody else or not, but we have, you know, community colleges, universities. A lot of people are sharing that because they want to make connections with educators across the country. And it's a great way of utilizing the assets of, a lot of this has been paid for by grant money and things like that. So it's good to be able to bring it into the classroom. So.
And the kids love it. The kids love it. It's really fun to be able to give them exposure to something like this. It's really broadening.
Cool. Thanks, Mariel. So, okay, you can see things at the nanoscale, but what can you do with it? Okay, what can you do with it? Let's talk about some applications. So this is one application, and actually is a little experiment you can do in your classroom. It's not that I really, really think I got a really cute little granddaughter, but I'm going to show a little video of my granddaughter doing a little experiment here. She did the whole thing by herself.
So my name is Bob. And this is Maya. Hi, Maya. Say hi to everyone. And we're here to do a little demonstration of Neverwet. Neverwet. Can you say hydrophobic? Can you say hydrophobic? No, it's a hard one. Okay, we won't do hydrophobic. Well, we remember talking about hydrophobic leaves, and we're going to do this demonstration with this Neverwet. It's a two-step process. Step one, step two. I just did one of these today. There's an X and an O.
Can I hold?
Yeah, you can hold it. This is it. Here, hold that one. And what we're going to do is we're going to pour in some of this, and you could pour some of this in there. This special water. Or special...
I mean, Mauer.
Whoa! Look at that. Look at that. You rock. See, look, you can see.
You might have poured a little too much in there.
OK, Okay, and you can see it float around. One of them was coated, one of them wasn't. Now let's try this one now. Try that one. Try pour it in there. Look at that! Ooh, isn't that cool? Is that cool? Look how it floats around. Well, that's our demonstration. We have the red X. Thank you.
So real quick, my car shopping story. I'm going to go quickly because we want to do a little something here in a minute. A couple years ago, about a year ago, I bought a new car. I went out and I looked at this sign that was in the car dealership. It was a new used car, actually. And I saw something on there. I said, never wax again. Okay, what are they doing here? Oh, I see nano. What is that? Okay, nanoparticles. Okay. Nanoparticle technology, it's basically using very small particles, and it's supposedly, I'm not trying to sell this, I'm just telling you that this is what I saw in the car dealership. Basically, you know, the wax drifts, if you wax your car, it drifts off at about 1% to 2% per day, it loses its effectiveness. It polymer silicon drifts off at about 0.5% to 1% per day, and then this nanoscale material basically that they're using on as a coating on the surface stays on top for 5 years supposedly. Okay, so my conclusion from that is that nanotechnology is ubiquitous. Any place you go, you're going to see nanotechnology. You may not know it may not be out in front of you, but it's out there all over the place. That's another application. I have videos on this that I will show. I will show one video, okay, and then I'm going to move on, but I'll show you one that's, make sure how that works here.
This animation depicts Keystone Nanotechnology that treats cancer more effectively than current therapies. Keystone Nano
through?
Is building on technology developed Mario? At Penn State yeah. and the Penn State Hershey Medical College. Keystone Nano assembles nanoparticles containing a therapeutic drug. With trillions of particles per ounce, an IV solution packs a big punch. The nanoparticles circulate in the bloodstream. Their structure and size, which is much smaller than a blood cell, allows them to travel in the body longer than free drugs. To support growth, tumors create blood vessels to supply nutrients. But typically the vessels created by tumors are poorly constructed and provide small gaps to access the tumor. Particles slip into cells and selectively kill tumor cells and shrink tumors.
Okay, great. So here we are. I'm going to show one more quick video here, and this is copying nature, a biomimetic.
Okay, this is NeverWet Super Hydrophobic Fabric System, this particular bottle. We also make
a Can you hear me, Mariel?
Paint that yeah. paints on surfaces. Okay. But with this product, you can spray it on
this
any clothing.
This is before they sold this technology to Rust-Oleum, basically.
Water
this is a company in Pennsylvania.
Shoot off of it. Chocolate,
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Ketchup, mustard, all of that sort of thing. Hydrophobic means that a surface is water resistant. Super hydrophobic means that the water will shoot off of a surface, won't even sit there. When you plunge this in the toilet and pull out, it remains dry. And with it staying dry, it doesn't have any bacteria on it. We made the outside of this very hydrophobic, and the center of it is untreated glass, which is hydrophilic. In other words, the center of the glass wants to attract water. The outside of the glass wants to repel water. So when we pour water in the center, it goes to the borders that we created
okay.
with the hydrophobic surface.
So you guys get the idea, I think. But there's a range of things. This slide I put together years and years ago, and you can see all the different areas where nanotechnologies impact. And these videos are all in there, and you can utilize them in your class. And you, if you went out searching, you'd find more. A lot more for, you know, nano applications that you go through, but you can see all the different areas where nanotechnology is being utilized. The 5th of February, Peter, who's going to be working on week 3 with Mariel, will actually then be joining with Jarrett from California, and they'll be talking about some nano applications, focusing on biomimicry and nano in medicine during that time. Okay. And why, I'm going to move on to why your students should know this. Why I think at least your students should know this. Hopefully it's becoming evident to you. And one of the things I do when we do recruitment is like, okay, you really need, if you haven't already, you need to add knowledge of the nanoscale to your academic toolbox. And if you, as the educators out there, I think you're doing a disservice if you're not giving them a little bit of understanding of the nanoscale, even some level of understanding and understanding of what's going on, because that's going to be the future for these students as we move forward. This is actually a slide from the National Nanotechnology Initiative, which actually started in 2000. I believe this actual vision was in, I think was canned in 2011, was redone in 2011. And it's an interesting vision, a future in which the ability to understand and control matter on the nanoscale leads to a revolution in technology and the industry that benefits society. That's a big word, revolution. And I think we're right in the middle of that revolution right now. And it's been going on for quite a while. Again, this was started in 2000. That's really kind of when nanotechnology came into vogue, if you will, when the NNI was started. And if you look around the outside of ring of this, these are all the alphabet agencies that have national nanotechnology initiatives. Last week, they had a workshop. I think Mariel and I both attended this with the NNI kind of stakeholders workshop. It was quite interesting, some of the people that were there and some of the talks that they talked about in nano in food and nano in medicine and nano in different areas. And where are we going as a country and what are the things we need to do? It was quite interesting. This is the same group. So the goals there are, they want research and development, obviously. You know, you're not getting anywhere unless you're kind of, you know, really delving in and understanding what's happening and looking at that that lotus leaf. I mean, that's a very simplistic example. And what can we do with it? And then develop those things like nanotech fabric and shirts that are super hydrophobic and whatever it might be. And of course, you talked about lightweight lightweighting materials for cars or stronger materials or whatever it might be. All kinds of areas. Those are the products that we want to make as we move forward, develop them into products. And in order to make those products, you need a workforce that knows how to work at that size and scale. So you need a skilled workforce. And that's where you come in at all levels, you know, all the way from K to six, all the way through the university level. We should be infusing nanotechnology into our curriculum. And you need the infrastructure, the tools to make things at that scale, and also the things to tools to look at things at that scale. And that could be a chemistry hood. It could be in the case of bottom up nanofabrication, or it could be as something like a $1 million clean room, basically for that. And obviously, they want it done responsibly. Okay, we don't want any issues with any bad actors out there. So, and that's something that they're investing in, and the government is investing in. This is actually interesting, because I had some forecast out there. And why should we be excited about nanotechnology? This was done by Mariel's students, actually, did this. You want to talk about this for a minute here, Mariel, and talk about what they did?
Well, yeah. I had summaries from there's a great book that I have in the resources, and it's was written in 2000, and I have them. It's a good starting place. I said, but things are new, so go and find out what's going on out there in the world. And they uncovered this. It's just staggering, the global market value, because so many products that are, you know, wearable electronics and wearable electronic tattoos and so many new things that are coming in. And there's so much creativity that you can put into it with your, you know, when you start thinking about all the things that we can, that are going to happen. Sensing medical, these are the areas that are really exploding, and it really is true. Self-powered nanotech devices. They're really excited about it. And I thought, this is a nice graphic. They did a good job. So I brought it here for you. So they're excited. So I hope you pick up that excitement as well. There you go.
I like the idea. I like that graph, or that concentric graph there, that so it shows that, hey, you know, the cost of technology is going down. You know, and all these other things are growing, and also problems, you know, with deployment are going down, where kind of like these other things are being adopted. You can see the pink coming out on the outside there. So I thought that was quite an interesting, you know, if that's the 2018 to 2025, basically. Mm-hmm. Obviously, 2025 is a prediction of where we're going. So a forecast from 2016, this is by Mihail Rilko. He's one of the founders of the NNI. He's at the NSF now. By 2020, 70% of all new advanced technology products will incorporate nanotechnology. That's a bold statement. Any new advanced technology, but it isn't really, because when we talked earlier before the session, Oscar was talking about, you know, his wife is working at MIT and she's working in an area. And Mariel asks, is she a nanotechnologist? He says, all researchers are nanotechnologists. Anybody who's researching in the STEM field is researching in nanotechnology. So that's not surprising that advanced technology products will incorporate nano. So obviously, market and jobs, this is about adding your nano to your students' toolboxes. The number of jobs needing different skill levels will increase. And this is not, there's a place in here for everyone in your classroom. It's not just for the PhD scientists. It's not just for the future engineer or scientist that, you know, baccalaureate or master's level scientist. It's for the technician. As a matter of fact, they're going to need more technicians than they are needing those higher level people. Obviously, it's a pyramid. So getting these people into programs, you know, at Community College of Philadelphia or at a university or whatever, are very important to your people. So then we need to increase the supply of people who are nano literate, if you will. This is a video. I'm not going to show this, but I have it in here. Actually, we're going to be sharing these slides, but it's a seven minute video. And we have a nano workforce program that one of the folks on here, it's been a partner of ours from the Community College of Philadelphia. We have a nano workforce program, and we kind of was the first ones that started it. And Randy actually was there before I was. And it's actually sharing our resources at Penn State with community colleges across Pennsylvania, and actually having them do training here at Penn State and getting credits from back at their home school. They do 18 credits of fabrication and characterization. This is about things that are happening in this area. And it's not necessarily just about that, but it talks about in more depth about applications, about kind of some of the things that these it could talk to the students, it talks to alumni. It talks to industry, it talks to government folks about where nanotechnology is and where it's going in the future. So this is another nice video for you to take a look at. I think that was some of the pre-work we had for this thing. One of the things we're doing in our national center is actually also creating international credentialing of the skill sets that we learned in that semester, and also not just us. We work with folks all across the country to develop standards as to what should be taught to the nanotechnology workforce. And on the upper six boxes up there are the educational standards as to if you were starting a program, you could start with these educational standards that are available through ASTM International that were created through government folks, industry folks, and educators across the country. We led the effort, but it wasn't our document. These documents are created, and it's through a consensus process at ASTM International. These are out there and available for folks to utilize for integration of nano programs. Of course, that's not something a K-12 educator would do, but it's something that might be done at the next level at an associate or baccalaureate program. We're also in the process of creating certificates in nanotechnology and their personnel certificates, where students who go through programs that are teaching the stuff above would be able to test and then have these certificates. And they will be out there for, if Lockheed Martin wants to hire somebody, the barrier to entry may be these in the future. Have you passed those tests? Do you understand, nanoscale characterization? Do you understand nanoscale fabrication and processing, materials properties and scale? And that's the vision of where this is going. We're creating that through our NSF National Center right now. So we're presently working with industry across to make them aware of these. And we're working with an organization called SEMI and a couple of other organizations. We hope that the students who come out of there, they show that they know their stuff when they're moving forward. So nano opportunities, this and others, educational opportunities, as well as educational and industry opportunities out here. Well, myself and Tony D'Alessio will talk about this the last week of the workshop. And during that last week, we'll also wrap up with a Q&A panel, which will have all of the presenters from all of the 6 weeks there for you to ask, you know, kind of your final, well, maybe not your final questions, but questions that you might have for the group. So hopefully that is a good utilization of your time. And
no questions, just a comment. Guys, this was great. I'm really looking forward to the rest of this. Thank you for all you've put together.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. That was very nice.